You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Let's go straight to Phoenix, ladies and gentlemen, for Rob Wetzel and the Metal Report. Good evening, Rob. Rob, are you there? I guess Rob is not there. I thought that he had called in and was holding on the line, but evidently he's not. So we will dispense with the Metal Report for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I have no idea what has happened here. Unless he wasn't prepared to hear the hour before the hour of the time, and that might have thrown him off. So anyway, we will, well, maybe this is him. Is this Rob?
Hi, Bill. Yes, I tried to call earlier, and I got a tape recording.
No, it wasn't a tape recording. That's the program that precedes this one.
You were supposed to
hold on the line. That's okay. Let's have the Metal Report, Rob.
Hello, Bill. Thanks for having me in again. I appreciate it. I wanted to go over just real briefly the metals numbers for the week, what they closed at today. Gold is at $382.20. It's up $1. Silver is at $5.02. It's up 9 cents on the day. And platinum closed at $391.90. Up 90 cents on the day. Dow Jones Industrial closed at 5921.6, off 9 points for the day. The economy is some of the things I'd like to mention that have been in the paper throughout this week is factory orders are down 2%, which is a very sharp decrease in orders as well. The steepest decline since actually last January of 1993 we've seen in the last 3 months. Orders are very key, obviously, to any nation's manufacturing strength. When orders are going down, manufacturing goes down, and unemployment goes up. Unemployment last month was, again, continuing along the lines and following a three-month high for the year. And, again, these are highs that we have seen since 1993. The labor report should be coming out again next week concerning September. So I'll bring you those figures next week. Some of the other concerns I've had in the reports lately is that FDIC, a lot of your listeners probably followed that this week. They have been requested by Congress with a new law, a bailout plan that's been pushed through Congress sort of quickly. The banks in the country have been asked to kick in with a tune of about $6 billion to help continue to fund the bailout of the insurance program that protects savings and loan funds, or their depositing guarantee insurance program. They were talking about passing on as an additional taxpayer expense, but they sort of backed off that, and they pushed it on to the banks that are involved in it, as well as some of the savings and loans that are still out there. I wanted to cover that with your people, and there was an interesting report in the Wall Street Journal this week talking about the Federal Reserve or U.S. Reserve assets. It was a little concerning, and it took me by surprise, but it lists as gold reserves in this country the total value in assets of $11.05 billion.
Yes, that is more likely the truth. When we published the headline article in Veritas, and I forget what issue that was, I think it was number 5, that the gold in Fort Knox was gone, some of the people who listen to the broadcast and who read the paper wrote to their Congress people demanding to know how much gold was in Fort Knox. They received a notice from their Congress people that the Federal Reserve Board had informed them that there was something like $4 trillion in gold in reserve in Fort Knox. We knew this was a lie. And the explanation of the difference is the actual gold in Fort Knox that belonged to the Treasury is the figure that you just quoted, which is negligible. It's almost nothing. And the figure that the congressmen were quoted by the Federal Reserve Board is gold that is being stored by private corporations and foreign countries for a fee.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. One of the other interesting warnings came from Greenspan Monday evening. He was preparing a speech and announced to the press that he says, Greenspan warned Monday night that the president and Congress must be extremely cautious in taking actions that could inadvertently drive up the cost of financing the $5.1 trillion national debt, which we know is an extremely low figure. Greenspan in remarks prepared for a speech Monday, but it says on that he is very concerned that even the whiff of the possibility that the United States would not honor its debt would push up the cost of borrowing for years to come. Along with that, in a later comment from him, he was saying that his target over this year will be to get inflation to a 0% rate. No reason he feels why he can't beat it entirely. I find it hard to believe in going to the grocery store last Saturday with my wife that at this rate, with an economy that is built on debt and credit, that will ever happen. But they said that in an interesting report this week that a 3% annual inflation rate, which we have been told for years is excellent, will cause prices to double every 24 years. When you bring that down into realistic terms, it means that they're going to move or increase 50% in just 12 years, 25% in 6 years. Still, 3% sounds awfully attractive to us, and we've been almost lulled into believing that, but yet it causes an extreme burden on our income. Also noticed, did you read about or hear about all the Nobel Prize winners that they're announcing now?
Yes. Go ahead.
They announced 2 of them in the area of economics. Very interesting comments. One of them you probably remember well as a student of John Maynard Keynes. But one of his comments, a gentleman named Vickrey, this is 2 of the things that he was commented in and applauded for the strongest. His first comment was he has advocated the use of variable pricing. One of his recommendations is to have higher fees at rush hour traffic, for example, to relieve overcrowding on public transportation systems, toll roads, and other means of transportation. And this is a gentleman that received the Nobel Prize for Economics. You know, we're paying taxes for transportation systems to relieve pollution, to relieve overcrowding on our roads, and yet he wants to turn around and gouge the people that are riding on the buses and taking other means of transportation. Another comment made by him was that Vickrey defended the wealthy taxpayers should pay less in marginal rates. In media interviews Tuesday, Vickrey also expressed his belief that the federal government should increase, not decrease, its budget deficit, that only this alone will stimulate tremendous economic growth and employment. And these are 2 people that we look up to and now have awarded the Nobel Prize of Economics, and with the cash bonus of that award, turned them into millionaires. It never ceases to amaze me how things go around for us here in this country.
Oh, me either.
One of the other things that have come out in the news this week is in regards to our assets in this country. And what concerns me is I've tried to track down some figures. A lot of people know, and a lot of your listeners, you've made them aware over a period of time of your concerns about Japan's holdings in our debt in this country. In other words, their holdings in T-bills and bonds. They actually hold to the tune of $255 billion of our debt. Britain owns $142 billion, and Germany, $64 billion. That comes to the tune of about $461 billion. In actual currency to date, we have printed a little less than $400 billion out there. Obviously, if we even had to back it up by any means to save its devaluing over time, we only have about $11 billion in gold and actual assets. In fact, the total assets listed in our country at this time are only $76.78 billion. That's in everything that they would count of any worth in our country.
Now, if any individual tried to exist on an imbalance such as that, the government would come in and force them into bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We'd be locked up.
Absolutely.
At least try. The other concerns I have that have been showing up this week is I've noticed in talking with a lot of the grading firms and a lot of affiliate companies I'm associated with, such as Metals Industry and Numismatic Market, are they are noticing an upsurge in counterfeits. So I'd like to warn your listeners out there to please deal with firms that you know have a quality referral, that are firms that you can count on, and it's gone across the board from bullion into numismatics. Those of you that, again, are buying bullion, I recommend that you deal solely with companies that are known as mentors like Englehart, Johnson Matthey, again, coins that you know you can trust, and only buy from firms that you know beyond a shadow of a doubt in your own mind are reputable firms. In numismatics, there are a lot of people out there buying uncertified or uncirculated coins, or coins that have not been professionally certified and guaranteed for their authenticity. Again, please be careful. You mentioned a very key point last week, Bill, to your listeners. You said investments are good if you know what you're doing with them and in them. And I sort of stress tonight, if anything, please take time to know what you're doing in all of your investments out there in general as listeners of tonight's audience. Be aware of where your investments are, what's going on with them. Make sure that you make the people that are serving you in them be above reproach and keep you tuned in with them. That's their job, to serve you properly and to keep you informed moment by moment, and make sure they're doing that for you. And again, know beyond a shadow of a doubt in your mind that you're dealing with a reputable firm and that the products you are buying are what you're told they are. And that's about it for tonight, Bill.
Well, thank you, Rob. I'm sorry about the mix-up. As soon as I hit the button and you weren't there, I knew that the previous broadcast had probably confused you. So remember, this is a new network, so we're going to be increasing our programming, and there is an excellent broadcast that precedes mine, which is the hour before the hour of the time with Jackie Petru, and all of our broadcasting advertises Swiss American Trading.
Wonderful. Again, I'd like to recommend to your clients that if they do request or would like to have any free information on us, I'm sure you've given a number, but they're welcome to call 1-800-289-2646. My extension is 2139, and they're welcome to ask for Rob, myself. I'll be glad to get them any further information on some of the subjects we've talked about tonight and help them with any education or any information that I can as well.
Well, thank you, Rob. Have any parting words?
No, that's really about it, other than, again, as usual, the front page of the newspapers have told us all the wonderful news. It takes a little time, and I appreciate gentlemen like yourself out there who dig in to, as a famous gentleman out there would say, the rest of the story. In this case, the real story.
Yes.
I appreciate gentlemen like you out there who are looking for the real story and keeping us well informed and well ahead of the pack in it, too.
Well, thank you. And I notice you're settling in, you're not nervous, and then you went for 15 minutes tonight. That's wonderful. When we first talked, you didn't know if you'd be able to expound for that long. But I venture to say, as each Thursday comes about, you'll go longer and get better. And this was an excellent report tonight. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Take care.
You too. Good night. 520-333-4578 is the call-in number. I want you to all write it down. I don't know if we're going to take calls tonight. If we do, it won't be for a while because I have some information to give you. The number for Swiss America Trading is 1-800-289-2646. Also, write that down. Make sure that you call it. If you have trouble remembering the numbers, remember 1-800-BUY-COIN. And thank them for sponsoring the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network and the Hour of the Time and all of the other good programming that you're hearing on this network and that you will hear in the future.
need a song. But there by G-Man, he had to see where I was coming from. Television news makes me laugh right out loud.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the previous broadcast with Jackie Petru, she expressed her desire to discover the source of the president's power to write executive orders and expressed her belief that executive orders are not law. And this is one of the good things about Jackie Petru preceding the hour of the time, because when questions like that come up, I can scramble around if I have not already planned a broadcast, and I can give the answers to many of the questions that she may pose. Because I've been doing this research for about 30 years now, and most of the research that most people are just now getting into, I did years ago. And so I'm going to tell you that executive orders are law by act of Congress. And I'm going to explain to you tonight some of the treason that has occurred in this country, how and why it has occurred, and how and when Congress approved all presidential executive orders as law, past, present, and future, in a blanket act of treason, if you will. It is the story of the death of a nation. In 1910, ladies and gentlemen, a group of very wealthy men got together on a little island called Jekyll Island and planned for the destruction of the economy of this nation through the creation of a central bank known as the Federal Reserve. They were not able to enact this into law for another 3 years, when in 1913 the Federal Reserve Act was passed, placing control of the money supply into the hands of a privately owned central bank. Fractional reserve banking became common practice. The economy, ladies and gentlemen, was changed to a debt-based system. Money came into existence as a bookkeeping entry when a loan was made or credit was granted. To pay off existing loans, someone needed to take another loan or be granted more credit. They then had to spend the new money into circulation. Over a period of time, the real wealth of the nation began the transfer from the pockets of the people into the pockets of the lenders through foreclosure. Recessions or depressions were created at will by withholding credit, refusing loans, and raising interest rates. Inflation was created at will by granting excess credit, making loans easy to obtain, and reducing interest rates. Thus, the economy is manipulated and the nation controlled. The 16th Amendment was passed the same year, 1913, but it was never ratified. The proof exists in the records of the states for those who wish to research this travesty. The documentation may be found in a book entitled The Law That Never Was, The Fraud of the 16th Amendment and Personal Income Tax by Bill Benson and M.J. Red Beckman. This non-law allowed the Federal Reserve to skim that portion of the debt-created money that was unduly inflationary from circulation in the form of income taxes. This concealed the theft of real property and reduced the wealth of the middle class. It is one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto. Since the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified by the required number of states, it is not law. The graduated income tax is unconstitutional, illegal, and unlawful. The Internal Revenue Service is practicing criminal fraud. Gold and silver ladies and gentlemen, became paramount in importance. As long as the money was silver coin or the equivalent value in gold coin, the ruler's scheme would eventually be discovered. The goal became the elimination of gold and silver coin as redeemable money for its substitute currency. Long-term plans called for the elimination of money and currency altogether. It would be replaced by paper backed only by the full faith and credit of the United States. This, too, would ultimately become problematic when credit cards and electronic transfers took the place of the paper. A run on paper at the banks could disclose that the money supposedly in circulation did not, in fact, exist and expose the rape of the nation. The ultimate economy was planned. Those in power called for a cashless society. Such a system would allow the theft to continue until all ownership of real property was out of public hands and the population indentured in a system of never-ending debt with individuals chained to a computer. Whomever controls the money supply controls the nation, and whomever controls the nation controls its people. A cashless society will give the elite complete safety and complete control. The computer now makes a cashless system possible and most highly probable within the next 5 to 10 years. An example of this system at work was the Great Depression of the early 20th century. The central bank called in the reserves and cut off credit. Local banks without reserves were unable to loan money. And without loans or credit, the nation stagnated. No money was placed in circulation. The nation then plunged into depression. Those who leveraged investments heavily on the stock market were unable to meet their margin calls. The market plunged. Many lost everything. Another example of the manner by which the economy can be manipulated is inflation blamed upon the phony oil shortages of the 1970s. Inflation, ladies and gentlemen, can never be caused by any shortage. It happens by making credit readily available and easy for just about anyone to obtain. It can be further fueled by loaning into circulation large sums of non-existent cash. Another method to create or fuel inflation is to print gross amounts of worthless paper. Paper, ladies and gentlemen, is never money, and spend it into circulation. The public bought the story of oil shortages and readily paid more for gas and almost every other product, not realizing they were being robbed. Inflation is a true devaluation of the dollar based upon supply and demand. More dollars in circulation mean higher prices because dollars are easily obtained. The ignorant public is willing to pay higher interest with the excuse that it will curb the inflationary cycle and return the economy to normal. A modern example of how the elite work, quote, and thirdly, both our countries must try to move the yen-dollar exchange rate within a matter of a few months to at least 200 to 1. How do we do it? The third possibility, and this is the final and most dramatic step, would be to simply stop the capital outflow for a few quarters. We know that administrative guidance continues. One could tighten the administrative guidance to zero and simply require the large institutional investors, the insurance companies, the pension funds, the banks, to stop the capital outflow for a few months. That certainly could be done. It has been done in the past. It is the one step that could be implemented quickly. It would have an enormous effect in the exchange markets very rapidly, and it would not even have to be announced. End quote. That statement was made by C. Fred Bergsten, former United States Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for International Affairs, speaking at the 1985 plenary meeting in Tokyo of the Trilateral Commission. Only 5 months later, ladies and gentlemen, in September, the participating members of the Plaza Accord implemented the trilateralist strategy of intentionally driving the value of the U.S. dollar down allowing Japan to leapfrog ahead of the United States in banking and manufacturing. In 1985, Citicorp was the world's largest bank. Now it ranks number 29, the highest-ranking U.S. bank on the list. 16 of the banks above it are from Japan. At number 20, Industrial and Commercial Bank of China proves just how quickly our ship sank after the last GATT agreement was approved. On October the 6th, 1917, House Resolution 4960, known as the Trading with the Enemy Act, was passed. It gave the president dictatorial powers in his conduct of the war with Germany. These powers were unconstitutional. The Constitution clearly states that the only extraordinary power given to the president in any emergency is his ability to suspend the writ of habeas corpus. No other powers are granted to the president under any circumstances at any time in addition to the powers normally granted to the government. In Section 2 of the Trading with the Enemy Act, which defines the enemy under the Act, we find under paragraph C, quote, such other individuals or body or class of individuals as may be natives, citizens, or subjects of any nation with which the United States is at war, other than citizens of the United States, wherever resident or wherever doing business, as the President, if he shall find the safety of the United States or the successful prosecution of the war, shall so require, may, by proclamation, include within the term enemy, end quote. Note the term, quote, other than citizens of the United States, end quote. This will become extremely important a little later. The move toward control of the world under global government began with the League of Nations. World War I produced a legitimate desire for permanent peace in the minds of the peoples of all nations. Thus, it was easy to create a political movement that called for world government, a government that would end all wars. Sounds wonderful, doesn't it? For 4 years, nations which claimed to be among the most civilized on this earth massacred one another. Civilization paid the price. 10 million dead on the field of battle, countless victims of privation, innumerable maimed and disabled, a dwindling population, a weakened public morality, a destruction of wealth beyond calculation, a dislocated monetary system, unemployment, pestilence, and famine, sufferings of every kind after inconceivable horrors. In the agony of battle, men in the firing line dreamt of a healing and final peace which might crown and hollow their sufferings. The cataclysm awakened the universal conscience of mankind, and never was humanity better prepared to be manipulated in the name of peace. In America, in England, in France, in Germany, in Scandinavia and elsewhere, associations were formed to organize peace and prevent the return of war. Woodrow Wilson, President of the United States of America, finally formulated the outline of the League of Nations, which once peace was signed, was to inaugurate a new international era and guard against fresh catastrophes. Men of every race and from every continent had been drawn into the struggle. The new order was to be built up not on a European, but on a worldwide basis. The covenant of the League of Nations was to be embodied in the treaties of peace. The first ratifications were received in 1920. The United States entered into international agreements to establish a, quote, new world order, end quote, and a, quote, new economic order, end quote. International agreements were entered into establishing a de facto world authority. Gold was pledged to stabilize the exchange rates of the major currencies and establish the groundwork for interdependence among nations based upon the international regulation of exchange rates and world trade. The League of Nations, however, ladies and gentlemen, proved weak and ineffective. Another war would be needed to make the people of the world demand a more powerful world governing body. An economic war was implemented against the people until a killing war could be created. The economic war was developed through the banks, insurance companies, and investment houses by recalling reserves, denying credit, refusing loans, calling margins, and delaying payments. The Rockefeller and Carnegie Foundations issued grants in 1930 to create an organization in Chicago called the Public Administration Clearing House, or PAC, and that is the origination of the term PAC as it is used today. This organization conspired with the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, and the Federal Reserve Board to gain complete control of the economy and the nation. The PAC drafted a proclamation, which the Federal Reserve Board adopted. An attempt was made on March the 3rd, 1933, to have the outgoing President Hoover deliver the proclamation. Hoover, to his great credit, refused. The documentation of these events may be found in Public Papers of the Presidents of the United States, Herbert Hoover, containing the public messages, speeches, and statements of the President, January 1, 1932 to March 4, 1933, United States Printing Office, Washington, 1977. On March 4, 1933, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt issued the very same proclamation that the PAC had drafted and the Federal Reserve had tried to foist upon President Hoover. Roosevelt argued that the proclamation was for the purpose of dealing with what he called a national emergency in banking. On March the 5th, 1933, Roosevelt issued another proclamation, also drafted by the PAC, calling for the convening of an extra session of Congress, March 9th, 1933. On March 6th, 1933, Roosevelt issued another proclamation, drafted once again by the PAC, ordering by authority of the Act of October 6, 1917, an act no longer in force since the war had ended, a bank holiday from Monday the 6th day of March to Thursday the 9th day of March, 1933. These were, in fact, executive orders which Congress would approve and confirm with the passage of House Resolution 1491. Roosevelt justified his actions in his inaugural address with these words, quote, "It is to be hoped that the normal balance of executive and legislative authority may be wholly adequate to meet the unprecedented task before us, but it may be that an unprecedented demand and need for undelayed action may call for temporary departure from that normal balance of public procedure." End quote. Then he went on to say, and I quote, "I am prepared under my constitutional duty to recommend the measures that a stricken nation in the midst of a stricken world may require. These measures or such other measures as the Congress may build out of its experience and wisdom, I shall seek, within my constitutional authority, to bring to speedy adoption. But in the event that the Congress shall fail to take one of these two courses, and in the event that the national emergency is still critical, I shall not evade the clear course of duty that will then confront me. I shall ask the Congress for the one remaining instrument to the meet the crisis, broad executive power to wage a war against the emergency as great as the power that would be given to me if we were in fact invaded by a foreign foe." End quote. Never mind all that he had done up to that point, since he had stepped into the office of the presidency, was unconstitutional and unlawful, and what he proposed was as unconstitutional as well. And on March 9, 1933, Congress passed House Resolution 1491, also drafted by the Public Administrative Clearinghouse, entitled An Act to Provide Relief in the Existing National Emergency in Banking and for Other Purposes. The 73rd Congress began H.R. 1491 with these words, and I quote directly from the Act. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that the Congress hereby declares that a serious emergency exists and that it is imperatively necessary speedily to put into effect remedies of uniform national application. Title I, Section 1, the actions, regulations, rules, licenses, orders, and proclamations heretofore are hereinafter taken, promulgated, made, or issued by the President of the United States or the Secretary of the Treasury since March 4, 1933, pursuant to the authority conferred by Subdivision B of Section 5 of the Act of October 6, 1917, as amended, are hereby approved and confirmed. Congress, ladies and gentlemen, thus created a dictatorship in the presidency. The Constitution was set aside, and all executive orders by the president or his designees or the Secretary of the Treasury were given past, present, and future blanket approval. Now do you understand the source of executive orders and why they are law? Even though executive orders issued next year have not been written or even dreamed of, or so we believe, the moment that they are written and issued by this act are law and have been approved on March 9th, 1933, when Congress passed H.R. 1491. So by an act of legislation, Congress approved all past, present, and future executive orders written by the President or the Secretary of the Treasury as law, as an act of Congress written into law in House Resolution 1491 on March 9, 1933, when they passed an act to provide relief in the existing national emergency in banking and for other purposes. President Roosevelt immediately issued Executive Order Number 6073 on March 10, 1933, Executive Order 6080 on March 18, 1933, Executive Order Number 6102 on April 5, 1933, and Executive Order Number 6111 on April 20, 1933, which effectively suspended the Constitution and established draconian controls over foreign exchange, export, hoarding of coin, bullion, etc. Private ownership of gold was outlawed, and all gold in private hands except for jewelry was recalled. Thus began the American dictatorship and move toward the cashless society. All of these executive orders were drafted by the Public Administration Clearinghouse. Under this declaration of national emergency, President Roosevelt assumed dictatorial powers which have passed on to succeeding presidents throughout the years. Each new president has declared a national emergency during his administration. The Constitution has not been enforced since March 4, 1933, and we have been under dictatorial rule by each succeeding president under the Trading with the Enemy Act, as amended, ever since. In his annual message to the Congress on January 4, 1935, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, an avowed Marxist socialist and 33rd degree Freemason of the Southern jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite, said this, quote, we have undertaken a new order of things. Yet we progress to it under the framework and in the spirit and intent of the American Constitution. We have proceeded throughout the nation a measurable distance on the road toward this new order, end quote. In 1939, H.G. Wells' book entitled The New World Order was published in America by Alfred A. Knopf, New York. It discusses a world government to ensure peace. It reveals a revolutionary reconstruction. It states this new world will be built upon the philosophy of socialism. It ventures the idea of a world police force. It discusses world disarmament, including all nations and all peoples. Almost everything he predicts in his book has come to pass except for the disarmament of the people of the United States of America. H.G. Wells was a socialist with many powerful elitist friends. Today, ladies and gentlemen, the dictatorial powers granted to the president by Congress are defined in Title 12, United States Code 95A, Regulation of Transactions in Foreign Exchange of Gold and Silver, Property Transfers, Vested Interests, Enforcement and Penalties. 1. During the time of war or during any other period of national emergency declared by the President may, through any agency that he may designate, or otherwise and under such rules and regulations as he may prescribe, by means of instructions, licenses, or otherwise, A, investigate, regulate, or prohibit any transactions in foreign exchange, transfers of credit or payments between, by, through, or to any banking institution, and the importing, exporting, hoarding, melting, or earmarking of gold or silver coin or bullion, currency, or securities, and B, investigate, regulate, direct, and compel, nullify, void, prevent, or prohibit any acquisition, holding, withholding, use, transfer, withdrawal, transportation, importation, or exportation of, or dealing in, or exercising any right, power, or privilege with respect to our transactions involving any property in which any foreign country or a national thereof has any interest, by any person, or with respect to any property subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, and any property or interest of any foreign country or national thereof. End quote. Whatever happened, ladies and gentlemen, to the term, and I quote, other than citizens of the United States, end quote. It has disappeared. Now, I'm going to read some quotes, and then at the end, I will tell you where they came from. Quote, since March 9, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency. In fact, there are now, in effect, 4 presidentially proclaimed states of national emergency. In addition to the national emergency declared by President Roosevelt in 1933, there are also the national emergency proclaimed by President Truman on December 16, 1950, during the Korean conflict, and the states of national emergency declared by President Nixon on March 23, 1970, and August 15, 1971. In addition to these, you will remember that the act passed by Congress on March 9, 1933, also approved retroactively all previous executive orders, which means the declaration of national emergency declared by Abraham Lincoln and the declaration of martial law declared by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War between the states, which has never been rescinded, is still, to this day, ladies and gentlemen, by act of Congress, in force and applicable. It is the reason why the military jurisdiction gold-fringed flags fly in your courthouse, in your mayor's office, in United States District Courts in Washington, D.C., and everywhere else throughout the nation, for Abraham Lincoln divided the nation and the territories into military districts to be ruled under martial law during the Civil War. All of these proclamations give force to 470 provisions of federal law. These hundreds of statutes delegate to the president extraordinary powers, ordinarily exercised by the Congress, which affect the lives of American citizens in a host of all-encompassing manners. This vast range of powers, taken together, confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the president may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communication, regulate the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and in a plethora of particular ways control the lives of all American citizens. A majority of the people of the United States have lived all of their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have, in varying degrees, been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency. The problem of how a constitutional republic reacts to great crises, however, far antedates the Great Depression. As a philosophical issue, ladies and gentlemen, its origins reach back to the Greek city-states and the Roman Republic. And in the United States, actions taken by the government in times of great crises have, from at least the Civil War, in important ways, shaped the present phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency. In the practical working of our government, we already have evolved a technique within the framework of the Constitution by which normal executive powers may be considerably expanded to meet an emergency. Congress may and has granted extraordinary authorities which lie dormant in normal times but may be called into play by the executive in war or upon proclamation of a national emergency. Never mind that they are all unconstitutional and unlawful, for the only power granted the president above any other powers is the power to suspend the writ of habeas corpus. In 1939, upon congressional request, the Attorney General listed 99 such separate statutory grants by Congress of emergency or wartime executive powers. They were invoked from time to time as need appeared. Under this procedure, we retain government by law. Special temporary law, perhaps, but law nonetheless. The public may know the extent and limitations of the powers that can be asserted, and persons affected may be informed from the statute of their rights and duties, more properly called privileges. End quote. The paragraphs that I have just quoted, ladies and gentlemen, were taken from, quote, Public Papers of the Presidents of the United States, Herbert Hoover, 1932 to 1933, United States Government Printing Office, Washington, 1977. Now, there are a couple of small points that I added, mainly the portion concerning the Declaration of Martial Law and National Emergency by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. Now, if you think that this is absolutely ridiculous, never mind the fact that there were several executive orders declaring a national emergency already in force, and the Declaration of National Emergency and Martial Law declared by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. Clinton has also declared several different states of national emergency during his presidency. And I will give you just one. Executive Order 12923 of June the 30th, 1994. Continuation of export control regulations by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America including but not limited to Section 203 of the International Emergencies Economic Powers Act, Act 50 United States Code 1702, I, William J. Clinton, President of the United States of America, find that the unrestricted access of foreign parties to U.S. goods, technology, and technical data, and the existence of certain boycott practices of foreign nations in light of the expiration of the Export Administration Act of 1979, as amended, 50 United States Code, App 2401, et sec., constitute an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States, and hereby declare a national emergency with respect to that threat. End quote. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me assure you of one thing. The United States of America, as you dreamed or thought or were told exists, does not exist at all. It was subverted and destroyed a long time ago. The Constitution for the United States of America is not, I repeat, not in effect, cannot be in effect, and I have cited proof after proof after proof over this broadcast, and tonight I have given you the foundation and the entire history of how it came about and why it is not. Congress has never rescinded its act granting dictatorial powers to the president and approving all past, present, and future executive orders. You see, they are law by act of Congress, and the president can write them and issue them anytime, in any quantity that he wishes, as long as the American people allow him to get away with it. It is, in fact, unconstitutional, unlawful. It is treason. It is a dictatorship. It is the American tyranny. You will not be hearing the second hour of the Hour of the Time tonight. Instead, you will hear, at this time every night, Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham. From now on, the Hour of the Time will only be 1 hour, instead of two. I warned you, ladies and gentlemen, when I opened the phones, if nobody called, that I would do this. So I don't want to hear any complaints from anybody under any circumstances ever. I've got better things to do with my time, such as spend it with my family. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless you all. Stay tuned for Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham, which will be heard Monday through Friday, at this time from now on. The Hour of the Time will not be heard on Friday nights, as that is the time that you will be listening to Friday Night Live. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no promised land. The promised land has been stolen from us, and there will be no promised land unless you get off your lazy butts and make it real. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's broadcast of the Hour of the Time was taken verbatim from the headline article entitled Lazy Majesty, written by yours truly, William Cooper, in the very first issue of our international now newspaper, full-size newspaper, Veritas. You can still order that issue. It's a back issue, $5 postpaid to the same old address. This is the Voice of Freedom. Stay tuned for Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham.
To the Hour of the Time, I'm Pooh.
And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, my dear.
You're welcome.
Been a while since you did the pledge for us.
Yeah.
But you haven't really been up to par lately, have you?
Mm-mm.
Feeling better tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See you later.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Don't go away, folks. Got some things to talk about. I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. And my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy, well, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, cause the woman that deserves it gone. That's what she said, oh, that's all goodbye. Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, only the strong survive. And, I think... with emphasis, we need to talk a little bit about that tonight because things are getting worse. Much worse. Some people, for some reason, take issue with me when I level with you and tell you the true state of affairs without pulling any punches, because I don't think you can survive unless you know the truth. I don't think you can even wake up unless you know the truth. I don't believe that I can accomplish anything by sitting here and stroking your egos and telling you how beautiful and wonderful you are, and how we've got lots of time, and if we just, you know, work with politicians and things like that, everything is going to be fine. I can't do that. I can tell you that if we do all of those things, we will be responsible people, exhausting every lawful and constitutional and proper and responsible method to try to restore the public republic. Nobody needs to restore the public. The public is always the blithering sheeple public. But to restore the republic and to maintain freedom, which in my estimation is the ultimate achievement of all human experience, because the entire history of the world, man has always been owned by somebody, even kings. You say, well, who could possibly own a king? No king was ever set upon a throne except by the power of the priesthood, whatever that may have happened to be at whatever time in history that king was put upon that throne. And nothing has changed today. See, Bill Clinton wouldn't be sitting on the throne of this country unless the priesthood, the power that be behind the throne, put him there and tell him what to do. He's carrying out an agenda, ladies and gentlemen, and it's not his agenda. He's not smart enough, in case you haven't discovered that. So, I lay it on the line. I tell you the truth, whatever the truth happens to be, knowing that if you know the truth, you can prepare yourselves to deal with that truth and deal with reality, and you won't be destroyed when you discover that it really is the truth. You see, what if I stroked you along here and lied to you and tell you how wonderful you are, that you're sitting on your couch doing nothing? Most of you, some of you are not doing that. Some of you are very active. What if I were to tell you that everything can be solved with no problem just by writing letters to your congressman and making some calls and sending some faxes, which you should be doing just to be responsible? And what if I told you that there was no threat or any danger from the federal government whatsoever, that this, just, you know, we're just going through some rough times and some people are just politically misguided and there's some corruption in Washington. There is no big conspiracy. And by exercising the power of the vote and being active in our community politics, we can turn everything around. Would I be doing you a favor? Well, I think some of you probably wish that if I did that, I would be doing you a favor, and you probably wish that that was the case. But the truth is, no, I would not be doing you a favor. I would be doing you a great injustice. I would be wasting my time, ladies and gentlemen. And we would most probably achieve only another kind of sleep. But nevertheless, sleep is sleep. Okay? And I don't want to do that to you. I want to awaken you. And to be fully awakened means that you have to be confronted with a situation that is so horrible, so reprehensible, so against everything that we have ever been taught in our lives, that it may shock you into some kind of a lethargic state of depression for a while until you learn how to deal with it, however each individual does that. But most people do. And when they do, they get angry, and then they want to do something to rectify it. And when they get busy, they come out of that depression, and then they learn how to really live. Because in your day, in your daily life, if you're not dealing with truth and reality, if you're not stepping out in front of the crowd, taking a risk, I like to call it walking on the edge of the razor blade. If you're not walking on the edge of that razor blade, folks, you're not really alive. You're not living. Chances are there's no purpose in your life. There's no direction. And I know that many of you feel that way. Many of you went through school, reared by your family, who are probably working blue-collar or white-collar Americans, searching out in their own way for the realization of the American dream, and they may or may not have achieved it. It doesn't matter. What matters is all your life you were told that you weren't smart enough to own the company. You had to prepare yourself to work for somebody else. Isn't that correct? And you were taught wrong. You weren't taught how to invest your money. You weren't taught how to come up, to bring yourself up from whatever position you found yourself in when you were reared by your parents, who chances are achieved a better life than their parents. And they weren't really taught how to do it either. They just did it. But so many people, you see, buy into that kind of a concept. They really think that they're worthless. I mean, let's get real here. Nobody really thinks that they're worthless, but they have a very low self-esteem. They can't imagine themselves climbing any higher than where they're at most of the time. Although they'd like to, they just don't. There are so many people who are stuck in jobs, ladies and gentlemen, they've been in those jobs all their lives. Filing. File clerks. Filing papers and filing cabinets for somebody else their whole life. Do you really believe that they enjoy that kind of work? I don't think so. There may be some few of them who do, but I can't imagine it. And the pay, ladies and gentlemen, is not very good. And I could go through any number of hundreds of different kinds of jobs, and the description would be the same. Why do people stay in jobs like that? Because somehow they've been convinced by the system and by life and by their parents and by school and by school teachers and by bosses and supervisors in their own mind that they're not any better than that, that they can't be any better than that. To hope to be any better than that is to ask for disappointment. And it's just not true. It isn't true. Never was true. You see, because the man who heads the company has the same brain that the person who sweeps the floors has. He's just learned how to use it. Now, learning how to use your brain doesn't mean that you have to go to college, or that you have to read 5,000 books, or that you have to have an IQ of 180. No. Throughout history, there have been men and women with an IQ of 80, which is supposed to be not very good, who have achieved greatness in their lives, who have achieved a pretty good modicum of wealth, who have done great things, who have invented, all because they believed that they could and they didn't listen to anyone else. They did their best, and they learned how to use their brain. An IQ, ladies and gentlemen, is a measurement, really, of how you have learned to use your brain by thinking, and an awful lot of it has to do with common sense. Common sense? What is common sense? Common sense is when you touch a stove and it's hot and the coil is glowing red and you burn your finger, common sense is when you make the connection in your brain that when you touch that stove and that coil was hot because the stove was turned on, you're going to get burned and it really hurts and you better not ever do it again. So the next time you walk in the kitchen and you see that the stove is on, you don't touch the coils. Now, another jump above that that shows even better intelligence is that you never, ever touch the coils at all unless you have to perform maintenance on the stove. And you don't just look at the dial to make sure the dial is turned off. You unplug the stove. And then you let the stove sit for a while to make sure that the coil is cool before you touch it. That's IQ. That's IQ, ladies and gentlemen. It's also common sense. IQ is the ability on a low level to say 2 and 2 is 4. On a little higher level, it's the ability to say 2 times 2 is 4. On a little higher level than that, it's the ability to say the square root of 4 is 2. The part of it is education, another part of it is the ability to think. And anyone can do it. It may be a little more difficult for some than others, because, ladies and gentlemen, for the most part, scientific study has proven that your ability to think and feel good about yourself and use and exercise common sense is developed before the age of 5 years old. Now, I say 5 because I want to cover the bases, because there's studies that say before the age of 3, there's studies that say before the age of 4, there's studies that say before the age of 5. But all authorities agree that this is developed before the age of 5. So if you had problems in your life before the age of 5 years old, and you didn't have adults who would help you, or you were deprived or locked in some room somewhere, for long periods of time, or you suffered childhood illness for several years, it may be more difficult for you to do these things, ladies and gentlemen, but the fact remains, you can do them. The human ability to confront the truth, realize that it's the truth, and go into the survival mode and learn to deal with that truth and overcome it if necessary and prevail is astounding. But the fact remains that human beings must know what that truth is before they can go into the mode that lets them overcome it. And there is a tendency, a great tendency, for most people to ignore the truth unless they are backed in the corner and the truth becomes threatening to them personally. Most people have the tendency to say, oh yes, I know that that's going on, but it's not going to happen to me. And whoever it happens to must deserve it. Remember that fellow, you know, 3 days ago, they raided his home in the middle of the night, and they took out all those guns, and they spread them on the grass, and they said that he was a terrorist, and they took him away. And then in the newspaper, it talked about the fact that he was a member of a militia, and they were going to lock this guy up forever because he was going to blow up the Empire State Building. I always knew there was something funny about him. He was always talking about the Constitution things. Nobody ever talked about those things. But it'll never happen to me. you recognize anybody there? Maybe yourself? Maybe your neighbor? You see, they have the public so brainwashed, ladies and gentlemen, that you can have an exemplary citizen. A neighbor whose home you have visited many, many times. You have seen the kinds of guns he has, a shotgun, a deer rifle, a pistol, maybe a .22 rifle that he's had ever since he was a child. He may have bought an AK-47 back from Vietnam, or he may have purchased one simply because in Vietnam he learned that that's one of the best weapons ever made in the history of the world. He may have it there for self-defense, or he may just have it as a bit of nostalgia. Who knows? Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's perfectly legal and lawful. And the right is protected by the Constitution for the United States of America. You know that thing he talks about sometimes that you've never read? And all of a sudden he becomes a political threat to the status quo. And in the middle of the night, they raid his home. They spread these weapons out on his grass. They have a picture of these weapons in the newspaper the next day. On the 6 o'clock news, the anchor talks about Joe's house was raided, and it was found that Joe had been planning to blow up the Empire State Building, and he had automatic weapons. Now, you're sitting there. You know this is a lie, but you don't say a word, do you? No, you don't. Nobody has, and nobody will, and even if you did, nobody would report it on the news or in the newspapers. How do I know all this, ladies and gentlemen? Because it's happening all across the country. All across this country it's happening. It happened in Waco, Texas, where they said that they went to serve a warrant on David Koresh because he had automatic weapons. And they wanted two people, David Koresh, and I forget who the other person was. The truth is, they had no automatic weapons whatsoever. Period. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. And even if they had, ladies and gentlemen, it would have only required at that time a $200 tax to make it a legal ownership. You don't kill people for that. You don't drive up in front of their homes with cattle cars full of armed, flak-jacketed, teenage, ninja, jack-booted Nazi thugs. You don't do that. No, you go and knock on the door and say, we understand you have an automatic weapon here that you haven't paid a tax on. If you don't pay the tax on that automatic weapon, you're in violation of the law, and we're going to have to prosecute you. Would you like to pay that tax? It's only $200. Do you know anybody in the world confronted with that would not pay the $200 and make it legal? And why wasn't that done, ladies and gentlemen? Why were those people murdered? They say they were only interested in the children. No, they weren't. They didn't care about the children. They murdered those children. Murdered them. They took tanks in there, ladies and gentlemen, armored personnel carriers, helicopter gunships that fired down through the roof and murdered people. They had snipers all around the place, killing people. For a $200 tax? That's what they claimed. Well, the American public wouldn't buy that. What did they say next? Well, they said David Koresh was promiscuously sleeping around with all the women in the building. What do you want to bet? Most of those agents are sleeping around with somebody somewhere. You really think they cared about that? What do you want to bet that a good portion of the people in Waco, Texas were sleeping all around the town with people and were promiscuous? What do you think about that? And have you heard the stories about Janet Reno and her sex life in Florida with other women? You really think she cared if David Koresh was sleeping around with those women? Not on your life. And then all of a sudden, they made allegations that they were there because the children were being abused. Well, if they were, it's not a federal offense, and the federal government has no business sticking their nose in it. It would have been a matter for the local authorities, wouldn't it? But you see, those same allegations had been made before by the same people who instigated this raid. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? The local authorities had investigated the Branch Davidians and their children, found that those children were the most well-adjusted, happiest, brightest group of any group of children that they had ever investigated, and that there was absolutely no substantiation for the allegations of child abuse whatsoever. 2x they had investigated, and 2x they drew those conclusions. So what was that all about? Well, to this day, I don't really know. Except for one thing, that it was absolutely 100%, with no doubt whatsoever, about the destruction of the Constitution for the United States of America and the Bill of Rights. Can't happen in America, you say? How about Randy Weaver and his wife, Vicky, and his 3 children? Four children, actually. And his friend, Kevin. The BATF wanted to entrap someone so they could force that person to become a spy for them in the community that Randy Weaver sort of belonged to. You see, he was a separatist. He never harmed anyone. He didn't want to harm anyone. He didn't hurt anybody by that belief. And in America, you're entitled to believe whatever you want, aren't you? Is that true, or is that just a bunch of bullshit? Because they sent a BATF provocateur to sell Randy Weaver a sawed-off shotgun that was 1/4 of an inch shorter than the legal limit. 1/4 of an inch. He purchased it, and then later they sent another agent to buy it from him. He sold it. All the time, he never measured the barrel. He was told that it was legal. He thought it was legal. And then they arrested him and charged him with possessing a sawed-off shotgun below the legal limit. And they were going to put him away forever. They told him that. Said, Randy, we'll let you off of this if you'll agree to become an informant for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. He said, no, I will not do that. They said, in that case, we're going to lock you away forever. And Randy knew he'd been had, so he took his wife and his children, moved up to Idaho, up on a mountain, and stayed there. Well, they eventually found him. Went out there. The dogs sensed the marshals were there. They didn't announce themselves. They were hiding in the bushes. Randy and his son and Kevin thought that there were deer on the property and grabbed their rifles and ran out to put some meat on the table. Well, the son ran into the marshals. They jumped up and killed his dog right in front of him, shot the dog. Didn't announce who they were. Didn't say anything. The boy, thinking he was going to be killed, fired back. Kevin fired. Then they ran for the cabin, and the boy was shot in the back, ladies and gentlemen, murdered. One of the marshals was hit by his own people not by Randy Weaver or either one of the two boys. He was shot and killed by his own people, another marshal. Later, during the siege of this family, by over 500 federal law enforcement personnel, FBI, BATF, military. Yeah, they had armored personnel, carriers, and helicopters up there too, ladies and gentlemen, for this little family. A scum-sucking, Nazi jackbooted thug dog named Lon Horiuchi, an FBI sniper, shot and killed Vicki Weaver as she stood in the door holding her 8-month-old baby to her breast. She had no weapon, was guilty of no crime, had committed no crime whatsoever. Murdered her. Shot Randy Weaver, shot Kevin. His son was dead. After it was all over, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? Randy Weaver was cleared of all charges. All charges. Found guilty of nothing. And released. His wife is dead. His son is dead. He had been wounded. Kevin had been wounded. They had been up there in that cabin. Bleeding. With his dead wife and son. While he was surrounded by the most terrible, vicious, ruthless might of the government machine that you can imagine. And at one point, a helicopter was trying to lift a rubber bladder full of fuel to drop on his cabin to incinerate them, just as they did at Waco, to destroy all the evidence and burn them to death. What was that all about? And then in Georgia, a BATF provocateur agent, informant, went to the Georgia militia and began talking about making pipe bombs. And urging everybody to make pipe bombs. But everybody refused. Except for the informants. They went out and bought all the materials and bought the pipes and bought all this stuff. Brought it back. When nobody would help them make pipe bombs, they took it out in the dead of night and buried it on militia members' property without their permission or knowledge. And then they went to a judge and said that they knew that this material was there and that the militia was going to make bombs. And they obtained search warrants and went directly to the spot where it was buried because they put it there. Dug it up. And all this has come out in testimony in court, ladies and gentlemen. That was in Georgia. And the press made a big to-do about it and said that they were planning to blow up the Olympic Games. Remember that? And then, just as I predicted, during the Olympic Games, they found a pipe bomb that went off shortly after it was found. Isn't that amazing? And tried to blame it on a security guard named Jewel, who had nothing to do with it. Well, we have all the tapes that tell the truth, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be revealing that eventually. And then in Phoenix, Arizona, all of a sudden, there's a Viper militia that nobody in Arizona ever heard of, nobody connected with any militia, that is, that was making bombs and training to blow up all the federal buildings in Phoenix, Arizona. And they found fertilizer in their garages. Amongst all the militia members, they found about 300 pounds of fertilizer, which is 6 bags of ammonium nitrate, in all of their combined garages. Ammonium nitrate is a grass fertilizer, ladies and gentlemen. in the poor soil in the desert of Phoenix. You need a lot of it to make grass grow and turn green and look beautiful. Found no bombs, yet the press went crazy. Claimed that these people were planning to blow up all the federal buildings in Phoenix, Arizona, that they were making bombs, had made bombs, had bomb materials, and the press recorded that they had over 70 automatic weapons. Another lie, didn't have any automatic weapons, none at all. No bombs, no bomb-making materials, no nothing. They had never planned to blow up any buildings in Phoenix, much less federal buildings. The prosecutors in Phoenix, Arizona have egg on their face. Janet Napolitano, the local witch queen, who refuses to prosecute child pornographers who are caught red-handed because I guess she loves child pornography. I can think of no other reason why she won't enforce that law. But yet she goes after a group of people that she calls the Viper Militia and makes up laws as she goes along, makes up evidence, falsifies reports to the press, and then is extremely embarrassed when the judge lets most of them go and says that there is no substantiation for most of the charges. You see, it was all a lie. But do you think that the press reports the fact that it turns out to be a lie? No, they don't. Do you think the 6 o'clock news is going to tell anybody that across the country? No, they don't. Do you think it's going to be printed in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, the San Francisco Chronicle? No, it's not. So what does the American people remember? They remember there was a Georgia militia that was going to blow up the Olympics, and later a pipe bomb blew up. It must have been them. And they remember that there was a Viper militia in Phoenix, Arizona that was going to blow up all the federal buildings in Arizona, and there were bombs found, and they had over 70 automatic weapons. All of it lies. You see, this is propaganda, ladies and gentlemen. When these charges are brought, they know they're false. All they want is for the press to demonize patriots and militia in this country. And just recently, ladies and gentlemen, in Clarksburg, West Virginia, it's happened again. Leaders of the West Virginia Mountaineer Militia were arrested for planning to destroy the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division complex in Clarksburg, about 80 miles south of Pittsburgh, and two other government buildings in West Virginia. What do you want to bet this turns out to be just like Georgia and Phoenix? And by the way, the group in Phoenix known as the Vipers was not a militia, was never a militia, never claimed to be a militia, was not associated with any militias in the state of Arizona. It was a motorcycle club. How about that? Recently, they found some children engaged in delinquency at a school, and they called them a militia in the press. Now, if you've been paying attention to your newspapers, you will notice that every bad group of people anywhere in the world is now called a militia. This is a well thought out, well planned propaganda attack upon the American people and the militias and the patriots that live in this country, a la the old Soviet Union in their best propaganda attempts. Never did it any better than this. And since those in charge destroying this country are communists and socialists, they were probably taught by the best that the old Soviet Union had. Because Joseph McCarthy was right, ladies and gentlemen, all the way down the line. He was absolutely correct. This government had been infiltrated and was in the process of being destroyed from within by the international Marxist socialist machine run from Moscow. And since the fall of the Iron Curtain and the so-called split up of the Soviet Union, which is itself a deception, ladies and gentlemen, admitted by Mikhail Gorbachev and some of the top Soviet generals have admitted it. Those who have had access to the archives say that the Soviet archives prove that Joseph McCarthy was right, down to the exact number of communist agents that he said had infiltrated our government. It was confirmed that all of the communists who had been tried and put in jail at the great liberal socialist newspaper establishment claimed were railroaded, they weren't guilty, really were guilty, really were communists, really are communists, and deserve exactly what they got. And you have no idea how far this has gone, ladies and gentlemen. It has gone so far that in a school in Phoenix, Arizona, the Valley View Elementary School, in the Roosevelt Elementary School District, the principal proposed that they have a morning ceremony before school. Before school, ladies and gentlemen, where anybody who wanted to could come and they could all say the Pledge of Allegiance together. Guess what? The school teachers are up in arms against this. You see, the school teachers say they are citizens of the world, not of the United States. They want to devalue United States citizenship, and they want to foster disrespect for the nation that, despite its glaring flaws, is the very best in the world. They say they see no purpose for a patriotic ritual when the flag is a symbol of discrimination. Can you believe that? These are school teachers that are teaching our children. They claim that they are citizens of the world, not of the United States. And I say, if they're not citizens of the United States of America, round up their ugly asses and put them on a boat and kick them the hell out of this country. And the quicker we do it, the better. Let them be citizens of the world, somewhere else in the world. Here we have citizens of the United States of America and citizens of the states. They don't like state citizenship either, ladies and gentlemen. You know, it's voluntary. Any student that didn't want to, or any member of the community that didn't want to, didn't have to show up and say the pledge. Nobody was being forced. But guess what? The Arizona Repulsive, which is one of the two socialist newspapers, one of the only two newspapers we have in Phoenix, Arizona, both socialist, both owned by the same organization, by the way. One pretends to be conservative. You see, all across the country, ladies and gentlemen, every city, there's at least two papers. One will pretend to be conservative, and the other one is really socialist. Both of them really are socialist, if you really read them and understand what's going on. In the Arizona Repulsive, in a cartoon called Benson's View, it shows Hitler standing with his arm raised to the American flag, with far right on an armband around his sleeve, holding a little child in a death grip, and it says, quote, "I force allegiance to my flag of the Gestapo States of America. Stand up straight, kid, and to the repression for which it stands, one mindset and a threat undiscussable. Keep that hand over your heart, punk. With discrimination and injustice for some, like them no good poor and minority folk," end quote. You see what these scum-sucking, puke-faced, socialist, rabid dogs do to the truth? The truth was an American principle put forth an idea whereby anyone in the community, students, parents, community leaders, anybody who wanted to come to the school, before school started in the morning, and just have a little flag-raising ceremony and say the Pledge of Allegiance, could do so if they wished. No one was forced to come or would be forced to come. The teachers got up in arms and threatened to walk out, claiming that they are citizens of the world, not of the United States of America. And you wonder why your children are so screwed up? And then the Arizona Repulsive prints this disgusting cartoon, which is a total lie. You see, you have to know the truth, ladies and gentlemen. You must know the truth. Do you know that all around the country, in courts of law, parents who take schools to court for violating the rights of the parents and of their children are being told by judges that they lose their rights to their children when they drop them off at school? That's correct. How can that happen? Well, it is happening in America, spelled with a K. I could go through the Constitution for the United States of America, article by article, point by point, and show you, ladies and gentlemen, that we are not the United States of America that you always thought that we were. That if the Constitution is truly in effect, it is not effect in this country. And judges in courtrooms all across the land are telling people who cite the Constitution that if they do it again in their court, they will be cited for contempt and thrown in jail. Doors are broken down without search warrants. The military is used in law enforcement and military weapons and machinery. No state tenders in payment of debt gold or silver coin. You are not safe and secure in your papers, possessions, or in yourselves, nor is your home, nor your car, nor anything else. You do not have the right to travel unimpeded, unrestricted, because they can stop you and arrest you at the slightest provocation, and even without provocation, anytime they want, anywhere they want. Unconstitutional? You bet your life it is. And that's another reason why the Constitution is not in effect. Is the Constitution the supreme law of the land? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is. It is. It is ignored. It has been thrown into the trash can. It is disregarded. It is stepped on. It is vilified. And anyone who believes in it is called a terrorist. You don't want to call yourself a constitutionist today, ladies and gentlemen. For as in Cicero's Rome, if you do, you will be quickly and eventually dispatched, unless you have the guts to stand up and fight. So I want you all to know that when I sit here and tell you the facts as they really are in the real world, that I'm not trying to discourage you, I'm not trying to send you into fits of depression, I'm not trying to take away your hope or your will, I'm trying my very best to give you the situation as it really is, so that whatever despair it is going to cause you, it will cause you, and you will recover from it, and then you can join with the rest of us in the real battle. Not the phony battle, spinning around in some little eddy by the side of the stream as the real current rushes by. Not the eddy of spinning around on your couch, writing letters endlessly over and over again that get no result. Have you seen the latest Bob Dole commercial for why we should elect him to the presidency of the United States of America? His wife sitting there saying that Bob Dole wouldn't lie to you. Bob Dole is a man of his word, and he will never go back on his word. And she is lying to you when she says it. He has always gone back on his word. Isn't it Bob Dole that promised us that NAFTA would not pass? Trust Bob Dole, he said. I will make sure it does not get through the Senate. Isn't it Bob Dole that said GATT would not pass? Trust me, he said. I will make sure that GATT does not get through the Senate. Isn't it Bob Dole that when he was nominated and gave his acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention said that he was going to go after the WTO, the World Trade Organization, because it was bad for America? And he couldn't understand how such a thing had ever happened. It was Bob Dole who did it. Bob Dole is a liar. And you have to understand these things. Why can he blatantly lie like that and get away with it? Because the average sheeple has an attention span of probably 30 seconds, and that's why most television and radio commercials are exactly 30 seconds in length. So they know they can lie to you over and over and over again, because 3 days later, nobody, except a very few of us, will ever remember it or care about it. Because everybody else has just moved on to some other distraction. And they've forgotten about it. They're too busy having a party. Or figuring out how to get laid. Or how to get more money at their job without really doing anything more for it. All the while complaining and castigating their boss and their employer for paying them that paycheck for doing as little as they did. Isn't it amazing? What galls me, ladies and gentlemen, is that those of us who are really fighting this battle and putting the lives of ourselves and our families in danger because of it are doing it for so many people who don't even care and don't deserve it and probably really should be enslaved, if you want to know the truth. It's really quite disgusting, in my humble estimation. What do you think? Recently, ladies and gentlemen, in Pennsylvania, Steve Ames and his wife lost their two children. Why? Well, because they instructed them in politics and religion. Yes, I said it right, ladies and gentlemen. They read to them from the Bible, and they told them the truth about the Federal Reserve. Amongst other things. Tonight's broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in non-reportable, non-confiscatable hard assets. At least that's the way they are. At least that's the way the law reads now. And I don't know what happened there. Oh, I know what happened there. That's the way the law reads now, but remember, they can change that at any time. So when we say non-reportable, non-confiscatable, we're talking about the way the law is written today. Could change tonight, could change tomorrow, could change by executive decree 3 seconds from now. And it might. Which means that if you want to get your hands on some real money, you should do it. And then take steps to make sure that nobody knows that you have it. Because it won't be reported if you do it while it's non-reportable. Nobody will know that you have it but you. And safeguard it. Put it somewhere where no one will know where it is at so that you can get it. And I mean not in a bank deposit box. Ladies and gentlemen, not in a safekeeping box, not in any kind of those boxes in the bank that you walk in behind in the vault and do it. Because if they close the bank, they got it. And if they don't want to give it to you, they don't have to. 1-800-289-2646. Call now, ladies and gentlemen. Thank them for sponsoring this broadcast and the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-BUY-COIN. Good night, and God bless you all.
Something to play with, go and find yourself a star. Baby, my time is too expensive, and I'm not a little boy. Don't pick up my heart, it makes me furious.
Wake up, ladies and gentlemen. Abdicate or activate. The choice is yours. The future. The future is in your hands.
Feeling like it is.
This is the Voice of Freedom.